I've been in government since 1964. I started out as a part-time U.S. Postal Service employee while I was in high school. Some guy came around and says, hey, who wants to work for the federal government for part-time? And I says, well, that sounds like a good thing to do. So we filled out some forms. Some folks may remember the standard form 171. Filled out that, went down. He says, sure. And you could work for the post office at that time. And they says, well, what's your school schedule? I says, well, I go to classes from this time to this time. He says, okay, you'll work 20 hours a week, and we'll work it around your school schedule. I made, in that job, I think I do remember it because I was looking at the 50. It was like $2.37 or $2.93. That's what it was, $2.93 an hour I made. And that was a good little piece of change in 1964-65. So, I mean, I was doing very well. I bought me a little car off of that. Stayed with the Postal Service through the 60s, and then I was one of the old guys that was drafted in 1969. But that was kind of unique because I was drafted in May of 69, and it was right after the second Tet offensive in Saigon. I went through basic and went through advanced individual training, and then Ho Chi Minh died. So when he died, I was getting ready to graduate out of the military police school. And they canceled everybody's orders to Nam and gave us stateside duty. And the interesting thing about it was is that they had these dream sheets that the Army would give you. It says, where do you want to be stationed? Nobody ever got them, but I did. I said, I want to go to California. And guess where they sent me? To California. I said, oh, this is great. The Army's a great place. But I didn't realize where they sent me in California was about 60 miles north of Reno, Nevada. So if anybody knows where Reno, Nevada is, in the middle of a high desert, so you go 60 miles, you go into a higher desert, and there's nothing. It was a special site, and that we had to get dressed up and spit shine our shoes just to walk in the desert. Before that, I thought I wanted to do a whole bunch of different things, but once I was drafted in the Army, I was introduced to law enforcement and physical security. Upon leaving the Army, I served as a Prince William County Virginia policeman for 5 years, and I really enjoyed those years. It taught me a lot. I returned to the Army as a commissioned military police officer. There, I served in numerous chief of police or provost marshal positions and comptroller positions. I am a military comptroller, MP comptroller. That's the classification. Additionally, I taught law enforcement, physical security, comptrollership, civilian personnel management subjects at the Army's Military Police School. After my Army retirement, I worked for a security integrator and a defense contractor. After a couple of years of doing that, I was lured back into the federal government by a friend of mine who said, I really need to come and work with the U.S. Department of Commerce. He said he wanted me to do some security assessments and things of that nature. So I said, okay, fine. The motivating factor for me coming back into the federal government wasn't money, because I was retired living in a place called Hepzibah, Georgia. I mean, they have a little sign down in Hepzibah, Georgia, says I'd rather be at Six Silos over Hepzibah, Georgia. I mean, it's a sleepy little town right outside of Augusta, Georgia, right next to Fort Gordon. I was working from home. I was still working private industry, and I was teleworking. It was a great job. My friend, he is now on the board of directors of ASIS, and I'll have to same Richard Yamamoto, he called me up and he says, you know, you really ought to come back. You know, we could use your talents and all of those kinds of things. I says, okay, fine. And so I applied for a few jobs and applied for a few things. And the opportunity came up at Commerce where to do some assessments. Once I got there, there was this new thing that just came out. And the then Secretary Guterres had sent to my boss this document called Federal Information Processing Standards 201. And he says, we got to sign this. And he didn't know what it was. I didn't know what it was. And he says, all right, get in that corner and figure out what it is. So after I reviewed it, I told him, I says, well, this is a little problem. And he says, that's okay. You just get smart on it. I says, okay, but it doesn't talk about physical security. It doesn't talk about law enforcement. It talks about some IT stuff. And I said, well, nah, I don't want to get him that. He says, no, read my lips. You are going to do it. All right, so I did it. And after reviewing it for a while, I began to see a trend of where security was headed. The FIPS 201 folks, the folks that developed that standard, they did not have a real good grasp as to what is a security system. They didn't realize that security systems got to be linked to fire alarms. They didn't realize a whole bunch of things about the systems. So after, you know, a few months of dealing with that and dealing with the folks up at the National Institute of Standards and Technology, I realized I was above my head a lot. So I asked the assistance of the Security Industry Association. They immediately came to the federal government's aid. So they was able to have some work groups, things to sensitize many of the IT folk as to what is a security system. Now we're at a point where a lot of our security systems are really integrated into the IT infrastructure.